Welcome to Don't Trust the Mirror, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder, with psychoanalyst Maureen Kritzer-Lang, the queen of self-esteem. Maureen shares her personal journey of her struggles with an eating disorder and how that changed her life. Listen as Maureen shares her pain, her stories, and her triumphs. Today, as a psychoanalyst, her mission is to help as many women as possible overcome their challenges. Now, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder.
Hi, I'm Maureen Kritzer-Lang, the queen of self-esteem. Welcome to my podcast, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder. I am very happy to have a guest that I have previously had on my podcast who is here again, Michelle May. Hi, Michelle. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me again, Maureen. I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you. It's actually Dr. Michelle May. So yes. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. Michelle is fine.
I want to be able to give you your credentials.
No worries.
So Dr. Michelle May is a former family physician and recovering yo-yo dieter. She is the founder of Am I Hungry? Mindful Eating Programs and Training. She's the author of the Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat book series that teaches mindful eating to help individuals resolve mindless and emotional eating and this senseless yo-yo dieting to live the vibrant life they can. So thank you. I love hearing about all your yo-yo dieting thoughts. And we're here today to talk about this special masterclass that you're doing, which is the anti-resolution plan for the year.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, I think the new year is the epitome of yo-yo dieting. I call it the eat, repent, repeat cycle, because oftentimes people are eating all the way through the holidays with the anticipation that the new year is coming. They're going to have to go on a diet then, so might as well enjoy all the foods. And then when the new year comes, then they feel deprived and restricted. So it's typically a cycle that we see in a microcosm all year long. But during this time of year, people are starting to really, you know, plan to get back in control. And so I wanted to give people another way of thinking about that.
Yes, because I think that it's very repetitive. And I am already hearing in my practice, people talk about all the food and the worries about food and eating too much and being overwhelmed by food and starting their diets again the first of the year, or, you know, eating at Christmas, then starving themselves so they can eat at New Year's and then start all over again.
Yeah, very common. It's a very common pattern. It's kind of what we call it diet culture. The diet culture promotes this idea that if you could just stay in control, you'll be fine. And so when people have a model of being in control, the flip side of that, of course, is out of control. And during the holidays, people might feel that they've lost control. As you said, there's so many delicious foods, so many emotional triggers for eating, and of course, a lot of memories and pleasure and connection around food, and frankly, foods that people often don't allow themselves to have at other times of the year. And so that is the perfect setup for loss of control eating, feeling bad and guilty about yourself, which only perpetuates the idea that you then need to get in control in the new year. And of course, as you and I know from all of our work, that in control, out of control pattern is frustrating, futile, and ineffective. So the anti-resolution plan is really about how to move to being in charge instead, which not sound like that much of a difference, but there's a big difference between trying to control yourself and being in charge of the decisions you make around eating and physical activity and self-care.
It's interesting. I was reading an article and it talked about the what the hell effect, which is similar to what you're describing, which is I had one cookie. What the hell? Might as well eat the whole package of that.
Right.
And so it literally is, you know, this, it sets it up.
Yeah. Well, you know, in psychology, they call this dichotomous thinking. Dichotomous. It's one or the other. And so if I have one cookie, I've blown it. I might as well eat the whole bag. And then I'll start over tomorrow or January 2nd, having no cookies again. And so that all or nothing thinking, again, is a setup for this perpetuating eat, repent, repeat cycle that has people so trapped and feeling so discouraged and bad about themselves and guilty and ashamed. And ultimately, I think it just leads into a cycle that does not get us closer to where we want to be, which is to have well-being and vibrancy and the ability to live the life we crave.
Well, and the holidays is the perfect storm with all this, like you mentioned, the emotional holidays, the food that they, you know, we may not get during the year, party after party, social gathering. And so it is the perfect storm.
It truly is. It truly is. And it's a shame because the holidays should be a time that we can enjoy these delicious foods and connecting with family and friends over meals and parties and enjoy even reminiscing about some of the favorite foods we had growing up or maybe traditional foods or culturally significant foods for us. There's nothing wrong with loving food or having emotional connections to food. It's part of eating. It's part of the pleasure of eating. But because diet culture tells us we should control ourselves, we end up having this undercurrent of guilt and shame. And then, as you said, the what the hell effect of, well, I've already blown it. I might as well keep eating. Because in the new year, again, another diet culture phenomenon, I'll be good again.
I can start again.
I'll start over again.
Exactly. So can you share a bit of the anti-resolution plan that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, it begins with recognizing that diets don't and haven't worked for most of us, and that they only perpetuate an unhealthy relationship with food that keeps us trapped. And I think many of the people that I help in a regular basis really do feel trapped in diet prison. Many of them, though, think that they're doing something wrong. They just don't have enough willpower. They haven't found the right diet. If only they had more self-control. When in fact, the whole premise of diets, it's unsustainable and it doesn't work for anybody long term. So the anti-resolution plan is really about breaking up with diets, recognizing that you're not broken, but what you've been told to do doesn't work. And we're going to move instead toward an inside out approach to eating, where we're making decisions based on our increasingly instinctive wisdom about how to take care of ourselves, eating when we're hungry, recognizing when we want to eat for other reasons, meeting those needs more effectively, moving our bodies in joyful, nourishing ways, and practicing self-care. All of these to feel good, not to be good.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can say the resolution of breaking up with your diet.
Exactly. That is exactly it.
An expression.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of resolution to break up with diet culture because we are literally swimming in it. It's like a fish in the ocean. They don't know, right? They don't know that they're swimming in water. And that's what's happened to a lot of people in diet culture. They don't know that this is a system that doesn't work. They believe that this is the way it has to be. It does not have to be this way. And so that's why I decided to do this free masterclass for the anti-resolution plan.
Can you share some tips or some things that people might start to think about going into the holidays?
Yes. The first thing is, there's no need to restrict or deprive yourself of the foods you love. Now, it is helpful to recognize when you feel like eating and to notice whether you actually have physical signs of hunger. My grandmother used to say that hunger is the best seasoning. So in fact, these foods that you love so much will actually taste better when you're hungry and when you're meeting your need for nutrition and fuel and enjoyment. When you're wanting to eat for reasons other than hunger, there's also an opportunity there. The holidays can be very stressful. We can have a lot going on and need a little bit of downtime. We might be tired or overwhelmed or stressed by finances or, you know, activities or expectations. So when we recognize that we're wanting to eat and what we're really needing is maybe a break or a little downtime or maybe to just say no or whatever it is, when we recognize that there's another need there, the desire to eat actually becomes a clue for taking care of ourselves.
Can you talk a little bit about the hunger feeling? Because I know people will starve themselves all day thinking like, oh, I have this big meal, so I'm not going to eat all day. And they get to wherever they're going and they are starving and feeling like they could just eat, they eat fast and they eat anything in front of them.
Right. That's such a great question. So we use a hunger and fullness scale to give people a measure of where they are, to get them more in tune with how hungry they are and how full they are as well. And so when you deprive yourself all day long of the food and the fuel that you're needing to live your day, by the time you get to that event, your blood sugar is low. And when your blood sugar is low, your brain doesn't have the fuel it needs to make decisions that work for you. So what happens is that people feel extremely uncomfortable at that point. Their energy is low, their stomach is growling, they might be irritable or on edge. And then when the food shows up, and especially the kinds of foods we tend to have at these sorts of holiday events, we suddenly have that loss of control feeling. People tend to serve or order more food than they actually need. Because here's the thing, being really, really, really hungry doesn't mean you need more food than usual. It just means you need to eat soon. And so right? You don't need to eat more than usual. You just need to eat soon. And so if you're that hungry, first of all, check. Maybe next time, don't skip meals all day long and save up, because that really puts you at risk for feeling like you can't make conscious decisions. And then second of all, when it happens anyway, and it will sometimes happen, pause and order or serve yourself the same amount as you would when you're a normal level of hunger, and eat slowly to allow your blood sugar to come back up so that you can become conscious again. I actually think that, you know, not skipping meals prior to an event is a better approach, but it can happen anytime that we may get overly hungry and then need to realize what's going on.
I think that was a great point. It's not that you need to eat more, you just need to eat sooner.
Exactly. And I think hunger is an important physiological cue that many people have learned to ignore, either because of dieting or restricting, or perhaps because we've gotten disconnected from our bodies for various reasons, or perhaps maybe we're just so busy that we don't bother to check in anymore. But the truth is that our body is constantly giving us information to help us take care of it. So hunger is a physical set of symptoms that our body gives us to say, it's time to fuel yourself. And so relearning how to listen to and trust those signals is one of the steps to really becoming more in tune to how to feed your body.
Well, I also talk with patients about how the first couple bites always taste really good. And then as you go on, it doesn't taste as good. It becomes you really don't taste the food as much. So whether it's the first or the second or the third taste, you taste it less going forward to really savor that delicious taste.
Right at the beginning. Yeah, that's such a good point, Maureen. I mean, the food almost always tastes better when you're hungry, as my grandmother taught me. It also tastes best at the beginning of eating. Sometimes my clients will tell me that they continue to eat because it tastes so good, or they just can't stop because it tastes so good. The truth is that probably by the time you're sated and you've had enough to eat, it's not tasting that great anymore, but you're eating a memory. You remember what it tasted like. You want it to taste that good again. It's not going to taste that good again until you're hungry. So when you recognize that and notice that indeed, really, it's not quite what it was at the beginning, that could be a great opportunity to pack some away for lunch or a snack later. And then when you're hungry again, it'll taste great again.
You can taste that memory again later.
Exactly. So
it's that feeling of being deprived. Like, if I don't eat it now, I'm never going to be able to eat it again.
Right, which is almost never true, right? Like, we can almost always experience something again. We can save some for later. We can go buy more. We can get the recipe. And on those occasions when we really truly will never get to have that food again, we can savor and enjoy it fully and remember that if it's so special, why do I want to feel miserable when I'm done?
And associate that with it rather than the good memory.
Exactly.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is anxiety, because I know, and I hear this a lot, is when people go to events, particularly with family or friends or certain people that they may not be as comfortable with, they feel very anxious. And distinguishing between the anxiety and the hunger and feeling like you need to eat to sort of help soothe the anxiety can be very common.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Including sometimes people will eat to give them something to do, something for their mouths and their hands to do to sort of temper the need to have a conversation that isn't totally comfortable. So this kind of social anxiety, or maybe the stress and pressure of some of these social situations, can be difficult. Now, food is one way we can soothe our nerves temporarily, but it obviously has strings attached. So if you know that you have a bit of social anxiety, cultivating techniques like slow, deep breathing and other breathing techniques, realizing that most of the time people don't necessarily need you to talk. All you need to do is have a few great questions in your back pocket that you can ask to keep them talking, which takes the pressure off of you. And giving yourself little breaks, you know, stepping away, go admire the tree or the garden, or you know, find a little bit of time to chat with somebody that is more comfortable for you so that you're not constantly feeling like you're under pressure.
Well, and that's part of taking care of yourself. Mm. Really be able to give yourself those breaks and be able to step away, which some people could feel very awkward about. And so they, again, just keep eating. Mm-hmm. And, to be able, like you said, to take a walk, look at the trees, nature, go help out in the kitchen, or sometimes just take and walk to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Be like a little bit of a break.
Yeah. And I think your point is really well taken. So this truly is an attempt to take care of yourself. Eating is often an attempt to feel better. And I think with mindfulness, I think once we realize what we're trying to accomplish with our eating, then we can begin to start to question what else might work as well, if not better. to meet those needs.
Well, the other thing that happens around the holidays too is drinking. And there's the alcohol is flowing. It's very easy, again, with eating and drinking to be able to drink to help with the anxiety or, you know, whatever is going on, but then also eating more.
Yeah. And again, these are just coping skills that we attempt to use to manage these uncomfortable emotions. And I think, again, remember how I said hunger is one way that your body communicates its needs to you. Well, a lot of our emotions are also ways that our body is communicating. So the feeling of anxiety, if we push that down with food or alcohol, we're missing the opportunity to take care of ourselves, to set boundaries, to take breaks, to take some deep breaths, to maybe even get away from that person that we're trying to have this conversation with that's causing, you know, us to feel out of sorts. And so sometimes if we can begin to think about our emotions as ways of communicating with our deeper needs, then we may be less likely to use food or alcohol to push those needs down.
I think listening to our body is so important because it really has its own language and it really communicates the truth to us.
Yeah, the wisdom.
Yes, and it has so much wisdom. It's how we sometimes interpret it or push it away that can make things very difficult. And it can be hard to listen to our bodies because we might not really want to hear what it's our bodies are saying, but it is so crucial to take care of ourselves, like you said.
Yeah. And I think learning to trust and listen to our bodies is a process. It's not something that maybe a person would do immediately on hearing this conversation. But if this conversation at least opens the door to beginning to think, so when I'm using food, is it possible that I'm missing an opportunity to meet my real needs? That sort of shifts the conversation away from good food, bad food. You shouldn't be eating that. That's bad for you. To, how am I using food? In what way am I using food to push down or avoid these uncomfortable emotions or soothe these uncomfortable emotions, which, by the way, is kind of a healthy response, but perhaps we can learn some other skills that would work better for us.
I will never forget. And when I was in the midst of my eating disorder and really just struggling with my symptoms, binging, purging, eating, thinking about food all the time, when they started to subside, my therapist at the time said to me, now you can really start therapy. Because that, when I wasn't dealing so much with my symptoms and really dealing with my feelings, was when my recovery really began.
Yeah, beautiful story. I love that. Not everybody I work with has a diagnosable eating disorder, but as you know, disordered eating is rampant. And because our culture is so steeped in good food, bad food, and dichotomous rules about what you should and shouldn't eat, I think oftentimes people don't even realize that their eating has become disordered, that they're using food to avoid helpful emotions, and ultimately are making their lives smaller, not bigger.
Yes, their world gets much smaller. And one of the things that I like to ask people, and I don't know if you do this or not, but is what would you be thinking about if you weren't thinking about food or calories, what your next meal is going to be? What would you ask?
Yeah, that really gets to the heart of the matter, because when I first started doing this work, I thought I was helping people with food. What I realize now is that I'm healing their relationship with food along with them in order to create space for the bigger life that they always craved and thought they would get if they could finally control their food.
It really is a freedom that people can get through work and healing their relationship with food.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Michelle, what would you offer to my listeners as far as just a few tips and something to also, you know, get them excited about your program going forward into the holidays now?
So going into the holidays, please prioritize your own self-care. It's very easy to get focused on the doing and the creating an experience or gifts or, you know, events for other people and to lose focus on really taking care of yourself. So prioritize your own rest, prioritize your meals, your opportunities for joyful movement. Really, really take supreme self-care. We call it a self-care buffer zone. Because the more you take care of yourself, the better the buffer is so that you're not so susceptible to all the demands and stresses of the holidays. And of course, that's a behavior that we can take right into the new year as well, because ultimately, this is really about living that big, vibrant life with optimal well-being.
Yes, and I think going into the new year, it's a great way to look forward to that and to feel like you are really have taken such good care of yourself and continue to do that. But that buffer zone, sort of like boundaries, like the buffer that that they can start to work on for themselves.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, when we're well rested, we can handle a snide comment, or we can be more patient while we're waiting in line. If we're well fed, we're much better able to manage unruly children or unruly party guests, right? I mean, all of these things are a buffer zone that helps us deal with the natural stresses that are going to come up during the holidays and frankly, all year long.
And help us feel better about ourselves as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So can you share with my listeners how they can find your program and where they can sign up and where they can look for it?
Absolutely. So our main website is amihungry.com. We have resources all year long, lots of free things that you can download to help you or blog posts that you can read. And then as you mentioned at the beginning, we're doing a masterclass. It's going to be free. It's a gift to all of your listeners. And that is called the Anti-Resolution Plan, How to Eat with Ease. And so I'll be doing this 90-minute masterclass the first weekend in January. So you can go to amihungry.com/anti-resolution plan, all one word, and sign up there. And I would love to hear about your eating challenges and your goals for the new year.
Thank you, Michelle. This is so timely and a real gift to my listeners, to everybody, a gift that they can give themselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maureen. Thank you for your work and the opportunity to share these ideas with your listeners.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening to My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder. Remember, trust yourself. Don't trust the mirror.
Thank you for listening to Don't Trust the Mirror, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder, with psychoanalyst Maureen Kritzer-Lang, the queen of self-esteem. We hope you enjoyed it. Please visit don'ttrustthemirror.com, where you'll find all our social networking links and can post your stories, comments, and questions. Until next time, remember, trust yourself. Don't trust the mirror.